It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. We've got a great panel for you. Tom Merritt is back. Roberto Baldwin from Engadget. Steve Kovac from Business Insider. We're going to talk about the news of tech, what's happening at Uber. The president just resigned. Is it the end of the line for Uber's business, or will they just keep on going? A new processor from AMD provides a little competition to Intel. And Netflix gets into the movie business big time. It's all coming up next on Twit.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 606, recorded Sunday, March 19th, 2017. My YouTube cover band. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Squarespace. Make your next move. Make your next website with Squarespace's all-in-one platform. Visit squarespace.com and enter the offer code TWIT for a free trial and 10% off. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/twit2. And by Nature Box. Delicious snacks made from high-quality ingredients. Eat well and feel better. Visit naturebox.com/twit to save 50% on your first order. And by FreshBooks, the ridiculously easy-to-use cloud accounting software used by over 10 million small business owners. Try it free for 30 days at freshbooks.com/twit. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the latest tech news with some of the best journalists in the tech biz. Of course, Tom Merritt, one of them. Great to have you back.
He's Thank now you, Leo.
Novelist Tom Merritt. Host of Daily Tech News and Sword and Laser. You're still doing that with Veronica, right?
Yeah. We still do that at least every 2 weeks, if not every week, if we have some authors to interview.
And you have a new book that just came out?
I do. This one's published through Inkshares, so you can actually get it on bookstore shelves as well as ebook and Audible. It's called Pilot X. It's about a time traveler.
Nice.
Cool.
You didn't write this during NaNoWriMo. This is a real novel. Oh, you did?
No, I did. I started this. I kind of, you know, got to my 50,000 words during NaNoWriMo, and then I spent a lot of time polishing it, obviously.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. NaNoWriMo is the November month where you have to write 50,000 words in a month, right?
It's a good way to just get yourself past any excuses and just get writing.
Right. 1,500 words a day. You could do that. Anybody could do that. You could do that. Even Roberto Baldwin could do that. From Engadget, ladies and gentlemen.
It's true, and I only have this thumb, so if I could do it, anyone can.
With one thumb, and the rest of his fingers tied behind his back. Roberto is, of course, senior editor in Gadget, but he's also the leader, and you can tell by the haircut, of a Devo cover band.
I don't know if that's good or bad.
It's good. He looks good in with a planter on his head. Nice to have you, and an LCD sound system cover band, which Tom Merritt quite.
Oh, that's perfect.
Cleverly said should be called Old Super OLED Sound System. Okay, maybe it wasn't so clever. But at least
it was nerdy. Like it. Yeah, we liked it.
I'm not proud, but I did say it.
And Steve Kovac's here from Business Insider, senior correspondent. Steve has apparently been consigned to a room without decoration.
Are you in solitary confinement, so, Steve? What did you do?
Okay, so I just moved to a new place in Queens, and I'm in the spare bedroom now, which we haven't decorated yet. So it
Johnny
looks
Ives
like
old house, right?
Yeah, it looks like I'm in a Johnny Ives white box right now, I guess. But next time I'm on, I'll have some decorations around.
There's a certain Spartan unity to it. I kind of like it. It looks, especially the metal door jams. It looks like you.
Oh, that's the closet, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You sure you don't have a supercomputer behind there that you're planning to take over the world with? Yeah. Good to have you guys. We were just talking before the show. Not much happened this week. Actually, the biggest story happened just minutes ago. Kara Swisher in Recode says that the president of Uber is quitting after less than a year on the job. Now, I'm not talking about Travis Kalanick, the CEO. This is Jeff Jones, who joined Uber less than a year ago. He came over from, where was he?
Target. He was at Target.
Tarjay. And of course, Kara's. I love Kara. She subheads this. He's leaving after apparently deciding the current controversies are too much to handle. I don't know if he said that. Uber has merely confirmed the departure and is sending a statement along. Sources said, though, he said, this isn't the situation I signed on for, especially after Kalanick announced that he was going to hire a COO to coach him to be less of a jerk. Right?
And not the first executive to leave Uber in the last couple of weeks, even. Certainly the highest.
He was a CMO at Target, so the idea was bring this guy in from a squeaky clean operation where he can help us kind of clean up our reputation. My mother, my 83-year-old mother, I put Uber on her phone so that she doesn't have to ask my sister for rides, so she can be a little independent. She won't use it. She says, "Oh no, my friends tell me they'll rob you."
What?
And I said, "Mom, they're not going to rob you. You've got their name and picture on your phone. That would be a dumb crime."
They don't have the app tip, so I mean, they're.
Well, that's the other thing. She said, "But I don't have to tip them, right?" And I said, "Well, no, actually, you do." "Well, I don't want to tip them
because they're going to rob." Well, maybe that's why she's concerned.
They'll rob her after.
Maybe if you tip some people, you wouldn't get robbed.
But it's what I think, though. The reason I bring that up is I think that the kind of the zeitgeist is kind of going against Uber. Like the brand reputation is getting hurt, even among people who are not, you know, geeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're not paying close attention to this story, you hear there were protests. Yeah. There was a driver who murdered somebody. Right. There's sexual harassment. This sounds like something I don't want to be involved with.
Right. I said, "Mom, cabbies are even worse." She said, "Well, no, I I won't take a cab either." So anyway,
at least she's consistent.
Yeah, at least she's consistent. So Uber's got a lot of money. They've got a, you know, I mean, is it the beginning of the end at Uber or what? What is the future of Uber?
I think it's the beginning of seeing a lot of people step down and leave. I mean, there's even weeks ago there were calls for Travis to leave, and I doubt that will ever happen. He'll hire someone's with, like you said, with a squeaky clean reputation to help him and be the COO. But we haven't seen the end of high level executives leaving from there. And a lot of people are waiting for their shares to vest and to get out of there as soon as they can. It's just, you know, you just hear constant stories about people upset with the culture there. So, yeah. You know, this is the latest in just a handful of top executives that are going to step down.
I think if it's going to be a decline, it's going to be a long decline. It's something where a number of people have already stopped using it because of all of these reasons we've talked about.
Last week on the Twit panel, every single one of them, I asked, "How many of you have deleted Uber?" All three of the panelists said, "I've deleted Uber." Anybody here deleted Uber?
I haven't deleted it. No,
I cover Uber, so I don't really have a choice. But I use Lyft exclusively.
By the way, that's my excuse for using Windows. I have to.
Yeah.
Well, I started using Lyft because you can tip people in the app, and it's so much more convenient.
Yeah.
Exactly. I like the idea of being able to tip you in the app. There you go. You're a good person. It's expensive to live in San Francisco.
Yeah, well, because I told my mom, you have to tip them. And she said, "Well, I don't have any cash." So she has to go to the bank to get some $5 bills so she could tip them. It should be in the app. Come on.
Yeah, you ask them about it, and they have roundabout answers, like as they do for everything when it comes to tipping in the app. And Lyft just put it in there. And I'm very surprised that 2 months ago, Lyft didn't sort of succumb to Austin's demands for fingerprinting of drivers. Because if we had had Lyft in Austin, they would have had a huge jump in, you know, the sort of people who go to South by Southwest, interactive, new musicians, the gamers. I mean, that would have been a super smart move on their part, and they didn't. So we all used, you know, some other apps. And for me, I'd had zero problem getting around Austin, but I don't whine. So
you were just back from South by.
Yeah, I got back Thursday.
We had heard that a week ago, last Saturday, that some of the local rideshare apps in Austin had failed. Their servers went down because of the demand on Saturday.
Yeah, so there was a rainstorm. And so then everyone, instead of
That's what you want. A taxi system that doesn't work in the rain.
Yeah. So instead of using the taxis, which were available, or the, I don't know, the metro line, it's also the light rail system is available. Everyone does what they do in San Francisco, New York, and LA is they try to use their phones. And when, you know, you hit a service, it's only really scaled up to the size of Austin. And even if it's scaled a little bit more for South by Southwest, they went down.
Are we hearing from Uber employees, drivers particularly, that they don't like working for Uber?
I've heard from drivers that they have a better experience with Lyft customers than they do with. They prefer Lyft customers, actually.
Oh, that's
because
interesting.
The quality of customer, I've heard that sometimes the Lyft riders are douches. I'm allowed to say that, right?
Uber riders are douches.
Our Uber riders, sorry.
Yeah. Well, no, you are allowed to say this because apparently when Travis Kalanick heard that Jeff Jones was quitting, he said, what a So, no, he didn't. He should, though. You could bleep that out. That's the kind of thing Travis might say, though. You could see him saying that.
No, I could totally see him saying that.
That's the old Travis. The old Travis.
That's the old Travis. He's going to go, I'm waiting for an Oprah. I'm waiting for some sort of rehab.
Yeah.
You know, a company's culture comes from the top down. And if you have a very toxic, you know, person who's running a company who's more than likely to yell at his drivers, or not his drivers, the contractors who are driving for his company, it makes you wonder. And so, if I were the president of Uber, I probably would have left too, because that's going to tarnish you if you continue to work at a place like that. And Steve said, I mean, people are waiting for their stocks to vest.
It's interesting, though, and I don't know if it's different in tech than it is in the general world, but you see companies that really have tarnished reputations. I'm thinking of Samsung with the Note 7 debacle. I think and then of Uber. And it really, it's an interesting question. How much does that hurt a company? Can it put them out of business?
I mean, it didn't put Apple out of business when they had their... Oh, I'm sorry.
Apple's
had
problems.
I'm just interrupting everyone.
No, go ahead. I mean...
Go ahead.
No, I mean, Apple, you know, they had their exploding batteries in the 90s, and, you know, they were in dire straits.
They didn't have to do a massive recall, though.
Yeah. For years, you heard, oh, you had an Apple laptop. Oh, is it going to blow up?
Really?
Or they would back...
Oh, right.
They did a little joke or whatever. Okay. And so, you know, you have Exxon with Exxon Valdez. I mean, it depends on how that company it navigates those waters.
Exxon, good example. Yeah, they survived Valdez. Tom, what were you going to say?
No, I was going to say, I think we overestimate how much people understand about some of these companies out there. And your mom's perception of Uber is one example of that on the negative side. But a lot of people who have good experiences using it in general may not pay attention to these stories either and keep using it. So that's why I think it's a long decline, if it's a decline.
Right.
And that's why they're working so hard to gussy up their image right now, because this is finally one scandal too far from them. Eventually, people forget, right? And people start going ahead and using the service because it's out of their minds. And so, yeah, it can hurt them, but I don't think it's the kind of thing that puts you out of business. You have to do a lot of different things to get put out of business. I mean, look at Toshiba. You know, they're declaring bankruptcy of the Westinghouse division in the United States. They're trying to sell off their solid state drive department to pay for that, their division to pay for that. And they're still going to be in business after
right.
that. It takes a lot to kill a company.
Let's not forget about the other piece of this, where let's say the cultural issues get hammered out at Uber. There's this whole other piece with the Waymo lawsuit, and that could effectively, if it is determined that Uber's VP Lewandowski, if he did in fact steal all those documents and use those documents to create LiDAR for Uber, that could totally hose Uber. That is the future of Uber. Now that's like, you know, several years down the road, of course.
Yeah.
But I mean, they see this as the future. They're going to get rid of drivers and, you know, be almost fully autonomous. And if it turns out they use stolen technology, they're either going to have to pay a huge penalty to Waymo and start licensing that technology, or start from scratch and develop it again, which puts them even further behind. And as we saw this week with those leaked stats about how often they, with their self-driving cars, how they have the disengagement rate is way higher than it is at Waymo. So they're a little bit behind already in self-driving cars, which is the future of the company. And this lawsuit could derail them even further. And so let's say they hammer out the cultural issues. This is even more important.
Although I have to say Uber's self-driving technology is not completely awesome. We're starting to see some of the stats out of this.
And, yeah, that's that leaked reports that came out this week.
Yeah,
exactly.
So, for instance, they averaged 0.8 miles driving before somebody, the human, had to take over.
And I forget what Waymo was at, but Waymo improved significantly in year over year. You can probably find the stats they released. I even wrote about it. And I already forgot what it was, but they released their stats too, and it was looking really good. I mean, they're improving. And if Uber just gets smacked with this lawsuit and they have to start from scratch, that puts them even farther behind.
Yeah, and Uber's getting a little bit better. I have to say, though, I think we're kind of selfish. I think in the long run, people will just go back to the Uber app because it's convenient.
Yeah,
and
of course.
They'll put it behind them. In a couple of months, they'll forget anything happened. And they'll just say, it's convenient. It's easy.
But if they've downloaded the app and they started using Lyft, Lyft is literally the exact same service.
It's an opportunity for Lyft, isn't it?
Yes. It's an opportunity for Lyft. So it's not like they deleted the app and then they don't have any other option. Right. It's not Chick-fil-A where you're angry because the CEO throws money at you know.
Right.
But, you know, where you're like, oh, where am I going to get delicious chicken? Well, I guess you can still get delicious chicken at other places.
Across
but
the
with
street.
Uber,
right.
Yeah, with Uber, I mean, Lyft is there. Lyft is ready. Lyft is, you know, and a lot of the drivers are Uber and Lyft drivers. For them, it's not that big of a deal. If someone deletes the Uber app, they're like, oh, well, they're going to lose Lyft. I'm a Lyft driver. Everything works out for me.
I've never used Lyft. I don't know why. I just used Uber, and I really liked Uber. The Uber experience was very positive. The black car experience is very positive. So
Lyft doesn't have as many different options necessarily, but most of the riders double. So every time I use Lyft, I don't notice a difference from you using Uber. Yeah,
it's the same people, basically.
Yeah,
often.
I guess it also comes down to how easy you can get one. Like, are there lots of drivers or not? And that really
depends on where you are.
Yeah, you guys all live in metros, so it's a little easier for you. Up here in Petaluma, your driver will be with you in an hour and 15 minutes. It's not.
Well, now that you've got that new Sun Country route, maybe there'll be more Lyft drivers.
Yeah.
People before the show, Sun Country Airlines, which is a Minneapolis-based airline, just put out a press release that once a week they're going to come to Santa Rosa from Minneapolis. Once a week. So I'm pretty excited about that new milk run between Santa Rosa and Minneapolis.
I think it's really a wine run.
That's exactly what it is. They say it's for people from Minnesota who want to visit the wine country. It comes out Thursday. I presume it goes back. They don't just park the plane. Maybe they do. They park the plane and they go back Sunday.
No, a plane has to be flying.
They got to go back, right?
That's how you make money. Once a plane starts flying, it usually doesn't stop until it breaks or until they throw it away.
Yeah, but they didn't announce, like, okay, maybe then they're going to go on to Orange County, but they didn't announce a Santa Rosa to Orange County run.
Well, it probably does. It probably goes from Minneapolis to Santa Rosa, then back to Minneapolis, and then does other things.
Okay. So that
means you can go back to Minneapolis and you can go to, like,
I could go to Minneapolis on Sundays and come back a Thursday.
Yeah. You could visit Paisley Park.
I want to go to Minneapolis. I like it.
See?
Go to Prairie Home Companion.
Paisley Park. I would just spend the entire time going through Park? Prince's stuff.
Do they let you in Paisley Park? No, you can't go in there.
They're doing tours now.
Is it
a
museum? Oh, see, I would like to.
I think
do that.
So. Yeah,
that would be worth it.
Are they talked about it? I haven't been keeping up with it. I should.
It's only August through December. It's the weirdest. It's like the weirdest. It's not a schedule. It's just strange. Let's take a break. We got. I don't know why. Because it's four stories total. So if I don't take a break now, nothing happened this week. Nothing. We'll make. But you know what? You're going to watch how we do this because these guys are so good. We're going to take really thin, useless, poorly sourced stories and turn them into some gold.
You just described my entire career.
It's called blogging, right?
It's called tech reporting.
Tech reporting.
Yeah.
There are weeks where not much happens. That's all right. There's more to talk about I'm sure, in just a bit. First, though, a word from our sponsor, Squarespace. I love Squarespace. That's leolaporte.com's on Squarespace. It's such a gorgeous place to start your website. Whatever it is you're doing, whether you're a restaurant, a photographer, an artist, a musician, if you've got a band, Squarespace has a template for you. They got a template for for whatever your business is. Make your next move known to the world with Squarespace. Tell your story. Pursue your passion project. Share your art. You start out, of course, with the Squarespace templates, which combine the best design. They get the best designers with the best engineering. You don't see that, but under the hood, so to speak, these sites do everything. They're mobile responsive. They look great on any size screen. In fact, if you upload an image to your Squarespace site, in the background, it's automatically sized to 9 different thumbnails to fit whatever size screen it's going to show off on. And so it'll always look great. It's got e-commerce built into every template. You can have images, galleries, videos, audio, built-in RSS, so you can publish directly to the web. It's really nice. There's a button on every page so that when you upload that page and publish it, it automatically goes to your social media, to your Facebook, to your Twitter, wherever you want it to go. And your viewers can do the same thing. They can share and pin on Pinterest. There's buttons on there if you want to turn those on. You get basically a great flexible tool to make a site that is unique and gorgeous and matches your aesthetic. Plus, Squarespace ties in with lots of services behind the scenes. To do payments, because they've got e-commerce. You can do email campaigns and newsletters. They have MailChimp integration. You could promote events with a calendar, RSVP directly from your website. No limit on the number of products or services you can sell. You get analytics on your customers, so you can keep track of page views and conversions, which content works better than other content, and even recover lost sales with automatic emails to customers who have a shopping cart and they never buy. You can have them automatic. Hey, would you like 10% off? I see you put something in the cart, but you didn't buy. Stuff like that. Really world class. Squarespace has your next move covered with free unlimited hosting, top of the line security, enterprise grade infrastructure, around the clock support. The best hosting, the best software, make the best place to host your next website. Go to squarespace.com. Try it free. And if you like it, use the offer code TWIT. You'll get 10% off. Offer code TWIT. To get 10% off your next website at squarespace.com. Tom Merritt, Daily Tech News Show, is here. DTNS.com?
DailyTechNewsShow.com, yeah.
Oh, DailyTechNewsShow.com. And TomMerrittBooks.com. That's nice.
And that's right, yeah.
Yay. Great to have you back in the fold, if only briefly.
Absolutely.
And how's Eileen doing? She's at YouTube, right?
LA. She is at Fandango now.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Rotten Tomatoes.
I love Rotten Tomatoes. You know what's funny? Because when I rent movies, I always go to iTunes because they have the Rotten Tomatoes score there. That's the most important factoid. And we will not rent a movie that's under 70.
That's your limit, right? 70. Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And boy, it was a movie that Collateral Damage. I wanted to see this. Will Smith. It looked really good. 12% on Rotten Tomatoes. I almost want to watch it to see how bad could that be.
Well, Iron Fist, it's a Netflix series, right? It's a TV, but it's got 16% or 17% maybe by now.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Also, Roberta Baldwin, senior editor at Engadget. Great to have you. Stephen Kovac from Business Insider. Speaking of Netflix, did you see that they are reviving? They're going to finish Orson Welles' last film.
No, I missed this.
Wait, what?
What?
They're going to fund it. Yeah, it was a Kickstarter that didn't get off the ground, so Netflix is going to come in and make it happen.
No, well, now wait a minute. It sounds like Orson Welles went to Kickstarter. He did not.
Right. <he's dead. laughs>
So it was a movie that called The Other Side of the Wind. Orson Welles took years. He actually died, I think, in 83 with it unfinished. He'd been working on it for 13 years. John Huston is the star of it. He'd been shooting forever. It was never finished. It was about a director. John Huston plays a director attempting a comeback movie after years of wandering in the desert of the filmic deserts of Europe. Everybody's wanted to see this. This is on the level of Jerry Lewis's "The Day the Clown Cried." That's one that I hope never gets resurrected. That's supposedly Jerry Lewis carries around an attaché case with the film in it. It's the story of a clown that gets.
God!
Should I not talk about it?
Robbie's scared.
It's so horrible. It's such a. There are comedians apparently who they will go and do script readings of it on stage until Jerry Lewis sends them cease and desist.
Yeah, I read Patton Oswalt's last book. He talks about that. They try to do a reading of it because they had the script, and Jerry said, no, you can't. The Day the Clown Cried, never released. Same era as this Orson Welles movie, by the way. It's about a clown in a concentration camp whose, I guess, job it is to make the children laugh before they get gassed. It sounds horrific.
And that is not the Netflix movie.
That is not the one Netflix is bringing back.
No.
So, this is, I don't know how much Netflix is putting into this, but it's this is a really interesting example of Netflix just saying, I mean, this is a niche product, The Other Side of the Wind. I mean, people like me will get very excited about this, but I don't know if you're going to generate new subscriptions. But it's interesting that they're willing to spend the money on this. 40 minutes of footage were edited by Welles before he died in 85. There are additional 1,083 reels of footage kept in a warehouse in Paris. Peter Bogdanovich appears in the film. Netflix is working with Frank Marshall, who is a line producer on the film, as well as Peter Bogdanovich, and a producer. And basically, they're going to edit the remaining reels and create a movie out of it.
Kickstarter needed $2 million, so presumably Netflix is kicking at least that much, if not more.
Yeah.
So who is the editor on the film? Did they have name?
It's going to be Frank Marshall because he was the line producer.
Line producer.
Yeah, so he has, I guess, the theory being he has the best insight as to what Welles would have done with it. Welles always said the edit is the key creative act in filmmaking.
It is.
So, Josh Karp, who wrote a book called Orson Welles' Last Movie, The Making of The Other Side of the Wind, said this is like finding a lost Shakespeare play, except no one wants to read a new Shakespeare play, so this is better because it's a movie. Karp has seen the 40 edited minutes as well as other footage and thinks that Welles would be thrilled by this. We won't know, obviously. But I think this is really interesting for Netflix. Not the first time, of course, they've foot the bill. In fact, they've got a number of movies in production, including, I think there's a new Will Smith movie they're going to produce.
Yeah, that movie actually looks pretty interesting, too. It's like orcs living in modern day time.
Orcs?
And, yeah.
It's elf punk.
It's really cool. Yeah.
Wow.
I'm kind of looking forward to that movie, actually. Yeah, it looks interesting.
They put $90 million up for that. It's called Bright.
Bright, that's what it is, yeah.
$90 million less than they paid for House of Cards.
Really?
Yeah, that was $100 million for the first season alone. So they got deep pockets. House of Cards was a big success. Got them a lot of subscribers. I imagine Bright will do the same because that's the kind of thing that appeals to geeks. But I have to think this Orson Welles is more like a labor of love than...
Oh, yeah. Funny because I talked to Netflix way back when they were just launching House of Cards. And I asked about feature movies and documentaries, and they're like, you know what, we get way more bang for the buck with a television show. And so they, at that time, they were just like, about movies. But now, I mean, I guess enough people subscribed. And
they're
doing well enough. Yeah,
I'm
a big fan of Netflix.
Yeah. Tom, you do a cord cutting show, Cord Killers.
Yeah.
I imagine you spend some time talking about these new Netflix originals, right?
Absolutely. I feel like their strategy here is twofold. One is to fill the niche of the person who likes this kind of stuff. They do all kinds of TV series that you're probably not even aware is on there. Kids shows, anime, all kinds of genres, because it'll show up in the right people's recommended viewing and they'll only be able to get it at Netflix. And I think that's the other thing with these movies is that, you know, down the road, especially with something like Orson Welles, if this becomes a cult classic, people will say, oh, I want to watch that. Where can I watch that? It's on Netflix. So they're trying to make it that library that you just have to have access to because they have everything.
The thing about Brights, which is, I think, a little different than House of Cards. House of Cards was produced by Trigger Street, Kevin Spacey's company. And then they auctioned it to different, you know, to HBO and others. It sounds like Netflix is like entirely a Netflix project. They paid $3 million to get the script written, for instance.
Yeah, they're doing that more and more now that they are in every country except China and a couple of others, because they want to have the worldwide rights forever, right? They want to have all the distribution. With House of Cards, they really only needed it in a couple of markets.
Yeah, they didn't get it, did they? They don't. Yeah.
Oh, they also just hired Scott Stuber, who's a Hollywood producer who's done Ted, Patriot's Day. He's on staff now at Netflix, so they have an in-house guy to do this kind of stuff.
He's going
to
do the outreach to, you know, find talent and bring it in.
When will they get the Criteria Collection? Because that was on Hulu, and I always would forget it was on Hulu. And then it went away, and I'm like, if it was on Netflix, I would have watched it all the time.
Please buy the Criterion Collection. That would be awesome.
I think Netflix wants to get away from the windowed stuff. They need enough of it like they have with Disney to put some big names in front of you, but they're more about being HBO, which is we have access to this amazing content.
Original creative content.
That we only have.
Nobody else has. Yeah. Well, that's one way to solve their problem, which is that, and this is the same problem that the streaming music services like Spotify have, which is they don't make their own content. They're beholden to the movie industry and the TV industry, and these companies can squeeze them as they are squeezing them, and they squeezed Netflix famously. They said, you can't have these movies for your streaming service. So this is a smart move. If you could pull it off to create your own unique, exclusive content, then you can say, see ya to Hollywood.
Now, and then they're getting the talent in there to do that. I mean, they're basically, they're recreating that, the HBO where they're like, well, I don't have HBO now because I want to watch movies. I have HBO because I want to watch Game of Thrones. I don't want to watch their documentary series. Exactly. I want to watch,
Is it a good thing or a bad thing that they've tapped the director of Suicide Squad to do this, Bright?
Oh, probably bad.
Depends on what you thought of Suicide Squad.
What was the Rotten Tomatoes score on that one?
Yeah, I got 30 minutes into Suicide Squad before I turned it off on the plane.
I haven't seen it yet. I'm waiting for it to come on to something, and in the middle of the night, hopefully I'll break another arm or a leg or something, and so I can be on painkillers, and then I'll live tweet it like I did with Batman Superman.
Wait a minute, you live tweeted Batman Superman while on opioids?
Yes.
And they say there isn't a drug problem in this country.
I know.
26%.
26%.
63% audience score. So it's one of those diverged.
Oh, yeah. Those always worry me.
Yeah.
Well, it's a superhero movie. I mean, you're always going to get that. You're always going to get the people who are like, well, I like it because
it's Suicide Squad. Right.
Suicide Squad.
Those are my people. Yeah.
It's a great comic book series. You're just going to you're just happy it's there. It's like the Watchmen. You're like, oh, this is going to be great. You're like, oh.
So we see, it's interesting because we see Spotify and other streaming services attempt to find their way in a similar situation where the record labels could just squeeze them to death and are. Spotify's turning to original content like podcasts and other original content. Audible's doing original content. Even Google is doing podcasts now. And you'd figure, well, Google and Amazon and Apple are probably okay because that's not their main business.
Yeah.
So they can run these music services as a loss leader to get people to buy their other products, et cetera. But, boy, I really worry about Spotify. And now Pandora's getting into the mix. Pandora is about to launch Pandora Premium, another $10 streaming music service with the same 40 million tracks that everybody else has.
Yeah, I don't like this. The CEO in this interview that you're showing right now made it sound like, we cracked the code and our app fixes everyone's big problem with it. It's like, no, it's the exact same thing as all these other services. There's nothing that truly differentiates them. It's you sign up for whatever you have. I use Spotify just because it was the first and I used it and a lot of my friends use it, so it's kind of fun. But there's no discernible major difference that makes one better than the other.
What Westergren says is we're going to be easier to use. The problem with these other services is you don't just open the app and press play and you've got the music you want. So here's the comparison.
Google Play is the exact same thing. Google Play came out with this AI infused thing.
You got to have some secret sauce. I mean, Apple, when they hired Jimmy Iovine, what Jimmy Iovine said with Beats Music is human curation. That's the key.
Yeah.
Human curation. What Tidal says is exclusives. That's the key. Exclusives. RDO had social. That's the key. Social. Yeah. Here's the three screens. On the left, Spotify. On the right, Apple Music. In the middle, this is the new Pandora streaming. You're right. There's no differentiator.
And you're missing
the one thing I'll say is
too.
And Google having Play, the right. Having the recent playlists there, as soon as you open the app, is a big advantage.
Recently
That's one
played
frustration
here.
I have. Yeah, the stuff I always want to see the thing I was playing recently show up there so I can get to it fast. But that's easy for other. If that turns out to be a differentiator somehow,
you could easily
really easy for other companies to do. That's not proprietary. Yeah. What
and
Pandora
it's just
is
like
trying
a,
to sell
right
is.
There,
we've got the algorithm and it's great. And maybe it is, but that's really hard to convince people to switch on.
Well, okay, they have a lot of users, right? A lot of people, Pandora Prime, or whatever, the Pandora One users pay money for Pandora because it's the radio station. It's using that algorithm. That's a very popular streaming service, close to number one, and I think, in terms of paying subscribers. By the way, the other thing they've got going for them, paying subscribers get 6 months free of this new service.
Well, yeah, and that's a great way to convert your existing.
Some people. Yeah, it converts some people, but it's not going to get them anyone new. And most Pandora people are using the free product that has an ad in the middle of it anyway, and they're not going to start paying for it just because of that. I don't know.
How sticky is a music service?
I don't know.
It's pretty sticky, but I don't think that there's a lot of there's as much conversion as these music services would like. I mean, Spotify, you ask them about conversion rates, and they sort of change the subject. You know, people sign up for free Spotify accounts, and they're like, "Oh, I'm fine listening to ads every once in a while." And then they're like, "Well, will you pay $10 a month?" And they're like, "Well, why would I pay $10 a month if I could just listen to it like this?"
Spotify is supposedly negotiating with the labels right now and agreeing to do exclusives for paying subscribers. So that would be one way they would try to get you to move from the free tier, is the newest albums would only be available on the paid tier for the first, 30, 90 days.
Yeah, this is where these guys have no negotiating power. They've got to do whatever the record labels want them to do. The thing the record labels hate the worst is the free tier. That's why Taylor Swift wouldn't be on, all of these services, because she didn't want her music to be given away. It's got to be tough. Now, Apple has some clout because Apple is the number one music retailer, right? Plus, their app is on all Apple devices. So you have, kind of this automatic entree. They also are trying to do exclusives. Chance the Rapper, I don't know, he leaked out. I don't know if this is true or not, that Apple said, we want to have exclusive for 2 weeks, 2 weeks only, to your new digital mixtape coloring book. We will give you $500,000 for 2 weeks and a 30-second commercial, which is worth even more, right?
Robbie would do that for half of it.
I would have done that for $250,000. Chance the Rapper is a genius because he owns the rights to all of his music. So that would have gone to, whatever record labels are around, right now. That he was on, but
Chance
doesn't even
have a record label. He's independent. He's on.
Exactly.
So he gets
he's
to keep
genius.
all of those dollars, right?
All of it. Yeah. All of it is his to do with as he pleases. I hope he buys a giant yacht that runs on Android. I don't know.
I actually was really impressed. I watched the Grammys and watched his great gospel performance, and it was so impressive to see him win a Grammy Award without having a record label behind him, the first independent to win a best record? I can't remember, record of the year. That's really impressive. Really impressive. Does it mean is this the beginning of the end for record labels? Well, who needs a record label?
It's hard to get publishing.
I'm actually really curious to hear what you think of this as a musician, to be honest.
So I went to South by Nile Rodgers talk, and he talked about the future of music is kind of partnering with brands.
He's the great producer who, by the way, knows brands. He created Freak Out, Le Chic, yeah. Le Freak.
Yeah,
Freak
Le Out. Chic. He worked with Duran Duran. Brilliant. He worked with David Bowie. He's worked with Madonna. He worked with, more recently and more famously, Daft Punk. This genius, this marketing and musical genius, and he talked about working with brands. If you can get in on a movie, that's amazing. If you can get a commercial, if you can do a launch with something, if you can, anything.
That's because you don't have radio anymore, right? You don't have radio to break music. How do you break music if you don't have it on the top 40?
Exactly.
It's Discover Weekly. That's it. That's the new radio.
Spotify. Yeah.
Yeah, and so it's difficult to sort of break through all the noise because there's a billion bands that sound like your band. I mean, whether you're it doesn't matter what band you are. There's other bands that sound like you. And that's what the radio, that's what the labels are supposed to do. But I mean, if push comes to shove, there's enough small independent labels that'll give you distribution and will help you out and won't take as big of of a cut because most of them are doing it for sort of this love of music, this passion of music. Or you can do it yourself. I mean, you can put it out there. You can put a mixtape out like Chance the Rapper. You can put an album out on your own.
Is his audience built entirely on SoundCloud or YouTube or something like that? Or how did he?
SoundCloud.
Mostly, SoundCloud?
Right? Yeah.
Another service that is about to go bankrupt, probably will go bankrupt this year. Sad to say.
Yeah. Well, a lot of these, you know, audio services, streaming, Spotify, SoundCloud, if they're not backed by Apple, if they're not backed by Google, if they're not backed by, Amazon, yeah, then it's tough to sort of survive. I don't know what Spotify's long game is because it doesn't look like they're going to make a profit at any time soon.
And the record industry controls that, not Spotify. Daniel Ek can't say, I'm going to make a profit. He's got to pay the royalties.
Yeah.
Sounds like they're getting those royalties down in these negotiations. They're getting a little bit of leverage.
So why would
finally.
The record... does the record industry need Spotify?
Yeah, they need Discover Weekly. They need to be able to make use of that now. There's enough with the 50 million paid subscribers plus. There's enough people that they're now worth paying attention to the way radio stations used to be. Yeah. Still are to a little bit.
That is, by the way, Spotify's secret sauce. You could talk about the playlists and the social and all that, but really Discover Weekly, which is a new playlist that's created every Tuesday around your interests, is, to my mind, the single best feature of Spotify. Do you pay?
Oh, yeah.
Do the labels pay to get on that?
Like payola?
Well, there's a lot of value. And that would be payola, wouldn't it?
It would be payola. I mean, that's how they got, I think the last time.
Yeah, but that's the FCC. That's the FCC. Spotify's not regulated as radio.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean,
you could have pay to play on Spotify, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Well, look, you know, Apple's paying Chance the Rapper $500,000.
Right. And Spotify wants to get a break on its royalties in exchange for exclusives to paid subscribers, which is
even if they don't get paid for Discover Weekly, they've got a stick.
Yeah, I'm sure there's all kinds of negotiations. I mean, I remember from back at working in music radio, there was not payola, but there was, hey, we can get you tickets to give away to that Guns N' Roses concert if you add this other band's record to your playlist.
I remember a few years ago, Madonna, when she was time to re-sign, did not sign with a record label. She signed with a concert promoter. She signed with Live Nation. Mm-hmm. And the albums were secondary. They were the excuse to do a tour. That's where the money was.
Tours are where the money's at. That's. I mean, you sell. Most people don't sell a lot of albums. You know, you get a pittance from Spotify, from Google Music, from Apple for streaming your music. You have to go on tour. You have to be able to perform live, and you want to be able to make a profit on that. And that's really where you're making money. That, or if you get a commercial, or if you're able to get into a movie or a television show. I mean, I remember in the 90s, like, oh, this band's selling out. That was like sort of our, you know, sort of Gen X sort of snobbery about bands. Now, one of my favorite bands, if TV on the Radio is on a TV show, good for them. I'm so happy because I want them to continue to make music, and, you know, selling albums probably isn't cutting it.
Madonna got a 17. I'm just looking back at this deal, which was made. This is Business Insider. In 2007, it was quite a while, 10 years ago, $17.5 million advance, $50 to $60 million advances for three albums, $50 million in cash and stock for the right to promote concerts and license her name. They gave her like a $120 million deal.
Oh, yeah. It's Madonna.
Yeah, but this is a company with revenues in the 30s of millions. That's 4 years' revenue.
Yeah. But it's still Madonna. Their shows are going to be sold out.
Yeah.
Every one of those shows is going to sell out. Yeah. You're never. I've never been to a Madonna show, and I like Madonna as, I like most of her music. I think as an artist and as a businesswoman, she's a genius. But I'm never going to see Madonna live because I'm not a super Madonna fan.
No.
And if I was, I would just be disappointed every time she goes on tour because I'd have to sell a kidney in order to pay a
same
scalper.
Thing with you too. And Live Nation has the U2 deal. And it's the same thing. That's where the money is. By the way, Madonna's deal runs out this year. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Like, was that a success for Live Nation? Clearly, it's a success for Madonna.
Well, even if she goes to someone else and they pay her, what, two-thirds of that? That's still... Madonna could go on tour by herself, like with a guitar, and it wouldn't even have to be a giant spectacle, and it would still sell out.
Her 2012 tour, which actually I paid a lot of money to go see, and we flew to Denver just to go see it.
Wow.
I'm a big fan. $305 million tour.
Wow.
Top-selling act of 2012. So don't knock Madonna.
She does think about what Beyonce can do now.
Yeah. No, yeah. Who's Beyonce with? Yeah.
With Beyonce. Warner she's with herself and her husband, I think.
Yeah. What's interesting is just how much the music industry has changed and how much flux it's in. There's no obvious next thing. Like, what's going to happen?
Who knows? I mean, we're talking about like really big names going on tour and making money. A lot of like small bands, they go on tour and you're just losing money. I mean, I will never make money in any of my bands. Even if my band gets moderately successful, my original band, I'm going to be losing money on that. I mean, you do it for the passion of music. And fortunately, you know, Beyonce, Madonna, Daft Punk, I mean, they've blown up. They're huge.
I had hoped that this new thing would make it possible, make it harder to be a super platinum artist, but make it possible for a lot more smaller bands to make a living. But that has not happened. I looked at somebody like Jonathan Colton, and I thought, look at that. He's unsigned. He goes direct to his fans. I think he makes a very, you know, a decent living, selling his own music. He does the cruises, right?
Yeah.
So he's made a business out of it, and he can make a living. And I thought this would be great if, 100,000 bands could make a living instead of, you know, a dozen multi-platinum artists. But I don't know if that's what's happened.
Well, I wonder if you still don't see more people able to make a living doing this. And fewer people being able to be a platinum artist, but there still are those artists. And whether it hasn't eliminated the old structure, but it does seem to have flattened it out. It makes me think of publishing. And publishers are still necessary. And you see a lot of authors deciding sometimes to do an indie book self-published and sometimes to go with a publisher, depending on what the book is and what the market is for it.
Did you even try to get a publisher? Why would you?
Oh no, I'm too scared for that. I'm a horrible.
But why would you though? I mean, what does a publisher add? You're doing just-in-time printing with Lulu, right? Or you did with this.
And this is more based on what I've talking to authors on Sword and Laser, what actual like people who have agents and get major publishing deals do. Is they go to a publisher because they provide better editing, they provide better marketing.
But you could hire a copy editor. You could hire many of those people.
You could, but it's actually, and here's the beauty of Inkshares, which is what I did with Pilot X. Inkshares does all of that publisher stuff.
Oh, nice.
Well, the only thing they changed was we don't have a slush reader who decides is the gatekeeper of what we publish. We let the audience decide that. So it's kind of the living in like both that. Worlds. And I think I look at publishing and I think there's a way for music to be like that where you can self-publish, put out your own music now easier than ever. There are places where you can get a little bit of help with production or hire some producers to you know, polish things up. And then record labels still have a place to say, hey, we can actually handle the scale if you start to get incredibly successful or have that potential.
Do you have to get Inkshares approval or anybody could do this?
No, and the way Inkshares work, anybody who gets 250 pre-orders gets published with a minimum level of input and help. And if you get 750, then you get the full publishing treatment with marketing and promotion and all of that.
Very interesting. Well, it's such a changing world. I've been talking about this a lot lately. Initially, you know, 20 years ago, we thought the internet was going to really be a boon for independent creators, for writers and musicians. It was going to be a boon for people who wanted to make video, who wanted to, you know, write magazine style articles. They could blog, who wanted to do radio podcasts. And it's to some degree been that, but it hasn't been the utopia that we might have thought.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's
succeeded.
You still need talent is what it comes down to.
Shoot.
I mean, the publishers and the music companies and the radio stations, those were all gatekeepers.
Well, that's the thing. I mean,
I wouldn't have my career if it wasn't for the internet.
Right.
Period. If it wasn't for the internet, I don't know. I'd probably be digging a ditch somewhere.
Okay.
You still have, you know, you still have to, you know, the people who write, the people who, you know, they're still I mean, there's not as many talented people. I mean, I'm a horrible, horrible guitarist, and I could play guitar all day. But
wait,
I will
you're
never.
Saying, even though you're a horrible guitarist, thanks to the internet, you can do this.
Well, I sing. That's why. That's my. That's,
oh,
that's
all right. So you can't
well,
do
it's
something.
Mostly that I sing and jump around is basically my shtick. And I do play some guitar. But if I was like, oh, I'm going to go on tour and I'm going to like sit in a cafe and play guitar and then I'm going to get famous, that's never going to happen because every song is going to have about 40 or 50 mistakes.
Right. Well, I look at Pamplemousse, very accomplished. Tom, of course, you know them. Jack Conte, who. I guess they're married now, right? His wife, Natalie Dawn.
Yeah.
Great YouTube band. We've had them on. They did a tour and they lost their shirt. Jack wrote about it. It just was ridiculous. It was a terrible idea. It really ended up costing him a lot. Now he went on to form Patreon. You still use Patreon, right? To finance your podcast because he saw that there was some need, for this. He wrote an op-ed that says,
oh, I remember this.
You can make money touring, but not if you're Pamplemousse.
That God love them for going on tour, but they the sort of things they were doing and spending money on was sort of if you're going to go on tour, you're going to sleep in a shitty van.
Yeah.
You're going to eat shitty food. You really got to lower the bar if you want to make any sort of cash.
Even the Beatles did, right?
Yeah. You sleep on. I mean, I talk to bands and they're like, oh, yeah. Or promoters who, you know, the members of big bands now used to sleep on their floor. Like, right. That's how you would go on tour. You would talk to the promoter. They get you a gig.
Right.
You know, you're a semi-successful band or you're up and coming. And the promoter would let you sleep on the floor for free. So that's how you were able to, that show.
Is it too soon to assess how the internet has... Has the internet improved things for the independent creator?
I think a little. I think it has, but it's also created a noise of signal issue. I mean, you're going to have
so much stuff.
Yeah. Any idiot with a guitar like myself can have a band and put it on SoundCloud. And so you're stuck with listening to my crap. And maybe there's like 50 other bands that are as crappy as me. And then there's that one band that you're not listening to because you're stuck listening to all the junk that I'm putting
out. So you don't think the cream rises like the talented band, because there's no gatekeeper, at least can record, put out a video, can tour, can whatever. They don't need a gatekeeper to get in the way. They don't have to get past the gatekeeper. You don't think, though, the cream will rise, that a good band will be discovered?
I think it can rise. I think it will rise if you have someone in the band who is willing to push. You know, being a talented musician and being someone who's good at marketing are two different things.
You still need some skills,
skills. You either need someone in that band who's going to push, do the marketing, do the sort of push, do the, you know, on Facebook, on Twitter. You know, it's tough to get bands just to go to, you know, get people into a club is tough. You know, I spend a lot of time like in flyers and putting things on YouTube and Facebook and Twitter. So you need someone in the band who's going to do that, or you need a manager or someone else. So you could be an incredibly talented person, but if you're not marketing yourself, you're going to get lost.
So here's a weird question, Robbie. I think you might have a good answer, is why does it seem like video creators have such a relatively easier time making it big and making significant amounts of money, or at least making a living on YouTube and other video platforms versus music artists? What's the difference there?
The difference between sitting in front of a camera and saying, here's what I think, and having it and saying that in a compelling way is way easier than coming up with a song. Songwriting is it's tough. You worry about, you know, do I sound too much like this song? You know, what where are my feelings? Like, you know, and you're writing the music and the words, and you're trying to create this image, and it's heartbreaking how much goes into each and every song, and then to have that song come out and be like, oh, it's not as good. It's super difficult compared to, I mean, and I'm sorry, but...
No, what I do is easy, but I do think that if you're going to be a success on YouTube, and Tom, you could tell me, because you have some direct experience of this through Eileen, you've got to work your butt off. I mean,
oh, yeah, yeah,
people
I
like
do.
Michelle
you
Phan and PewDiePie, they're making videos like crazy. They're working 80-hour weeks. They're working really hard.
And I'm not saying that their job is easy, but it's a lot. Writing music's really, really difficult, which is, you know, if you listen to the radio and you hear a shitty song and you're like, oh, okay, how does
that
got to
be frustrating. I know.
Yeah, that's like, incredibly frustrating.
That's got to be hard.
if you have
But I think there's plenty of people who look at YouTube videos and go, That one got 600,000 views. That one? That happens all the time, right?
Yeah, and that's your audience. If your audience, you know, if you can find the audience, and it's a lot, and again, talking and being funny or being, you know, is much easier than writing a song. That's, and I can't,
wow,
it's like,
you're going to get like, some mail on that one.
No, people want to yell at me that that having a show isn't as difficult as writing an album. Go for it, because you're wrong. writing a great album is...
Actually, YouTube's having its own problems. It's similar to the problems in general on the internet with hate videos. In fact, a French advertising, the sixth largest advertising agency in the world, Havas, has actually pulled their clients, including the Royal Mail, the English mail system, O2, which is a big English phone company, and a few others, some other big names, as a matter of fact, including Domino's, Emirates Airlines, and the BBC, they've pulled their advertising from YouTube because they can't be sure that it's not going to appear on hate videos. It's a real black mark against YouTube. YouTube says, we're going to figure this out. We're going to stop it. But Havas said, YouTube has been unable to provide specific reassurances, policies, and guarantees that their video or display content is classified either quickly or enough or with the correct filters. This is a problem. Buying an ad on YouTube is a crapshoot because you don't know where that ad's going to end up.
This story really annoyed me this week, and it's because during the whole, I hate saying fake news now because it's just been perverted the whole term. But during the whole fake news debate or the hoax debate, whatever you want to call it, these platforms like Facebook and Google are still having problems with this in their search results and on Google Home. But you know, they would always just say, well, you know, we're this, you know, agnostic platform and people can do whatever. And it's too hard. With so much content being uploaded to YouTube and all these platforms, it's impossible to vet everything. And, you know, these are the smartest people in the world saying this. And then as soon as advertisers start pulling out because...
Oh, now we can fix it.
Yeah. Advertisers start pulling out. You didn't tell us it was going to hurt our bottom line. Now all of a sudden they're smart enough to work on this problem.
Right.
That really upset... Like, that just annoyed the hell out of me when all of a sudden, you know, they ignored these hoaxes spread on their platforms that continue to be spread on their platforms and really influence people. And then all of a sudden that people who pay to run ads against this content start waking up to it and then they start doing something about it. That's just so annoying.
Yeah.
There's a troubling pressure here, though. No, I get you, Steve. I agree with you in a lot of respects, but there is a troubling pattern here to me, which is us constantly coming and saying, well, okay, Viacom wants YouTube to stop copyright protection, so they're going to put in Content ID, and it works really badly. And now DoubleClick, their programmatic ads sometimes end up against things because the algorithm isn't perfect, so we need to put a little tweak in there. And we need to go in and moderate news because some people believe things that aren't true. And even though there isn't a lot of evidence whether that really affects people or not, we don't like the idea of it, so let's have Facebook step in. And these platforms that have succeeded because they were able to say, we're just providing the place where people publish, are now being pushed into taking over. And while I agree in every instance, right? I agree that intellectual property needs to defend it. I agree that we actually don't want ads showing up next to extremist videos. And I agree that we don't want bad news being presented as if it's authoritative. I wonder if we really want these platforms to be, as Justin Robert Young calls it, hashtag portal to hell, the ones deciding what we see. Careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
Well, Justin's a friend of mine, you know, and I vehemently disagree with him on that too, because this is what media organizations have done all along, and we need to start treating these platforms as media organizations that they are. This is how a lot of people consume their media, and you are a gatekeeper in a lot of ways. It's journalism school 101. You do have to discern what's true and what's not true and what's valuable and what's not valuable. And I think they're finally now realizing that they have a huge role in this. It took a while, and it took, in Google's case, it took some advertisers threatening to, you know, take their money away. But there's a huge responsibility that goes along with being a disseminating being a portal for a vast amount of information.
Yeah, I mean, but what this does is just take away the money from those videos. I mean, it doesn't really it doesn't necessarily stop them. And then you have to like determine, you know, Facebook's algorithm is a piece of crap. I mean, it doesn't work half the time. We constantly have, you know, Facebook pulled this video because it was giraffe. I don't even know what it happens so often. It's hard to remember which one.
The trending topics. Where, they always have.
The trending topics and where do you draw the line with hate speech and with satire? I'm like, is this, well, the algorithm didn't understand that this Dave Chappelle bit was satire. So we pulled all the ads off of it. And yeah, so it's tough. And on one hand, I think, you know, any idiot, even, you know, hateful idiots should have their chance to say what they want. But, you know, if they got to understand that they're not going to get paid for it.
I just love the irony here. They refuse to admit there's a problem until.
Oh, no. They refuse to admit there's a problem until it comes down to there's a monetary issue. I mean, Uber refused to say there was a problem until people started deleting Uber.
Right.
And YouTube didn't have a problem with piracy until Viacom sued them. And it was, a monetary problem.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, please upload all that 70s show that you can to YouTube, and then
But to tie back to our earlier conversation, all of the progress for independent artists, musicians, publishers, video people has to do with permissionless access. The big leveler is I don't have to make sure I meet someone's approval to reach an audience. This doesn't change it much, but it is the beginning of I do have to meet these standards. And with Content ID on YouTube, it's a big problem where people won't do things that they have the right to do because they're afraid of going afoul of that robot.
Good point. That's a gatekeeper, isn't it?
Yeah. If my guitar riff at the beginning of my song sounds close to a guitar riff at the beginning of a Beatles song,
you'll get dinged.
Am I going to get dinged because I put on YouTube? And YouTube's really the place to share everything. You can talk about Spotify and Apple Music and Google Music, but really when I want to share a song, I go to YouTube, I find it, and I share it.
That's kind of the answer to Steve's question earlier is the musicians actually are making money by being YouTubers in a lot of cases or in other places. Look at Pentatonix. Pentatonix has risen to become a major worldwide artist, but they started as just a YouTube channel.
Yeah.
YouTube age gate. Is there a YouTube age gate? I had never heard of this.
Wait, what?
It's a crisis, according to Bleeding Cool.
Oh, okay.
The crisis that is YouTube age gate. Ever since PAC East ended, Twitter has blown up.
I haven't seen anything, but
maybe I'm too old.
It's blown up with the hashtag YouTube age gate. But what is it? That if you're not young, you can't be on YouTube? I don't know. I don't get it. Anyway, I'm going to take a break because I don't know what this means. Do some research, will you? It's blowing up. If you're under 12 or if you're under 12 or under 18, oh, I see. It's ratings. Kids are complaining about the ratings.
What? Wait, how can that seems 2014? Just sign into your parents' account. Come on.
That's what I did.
I just feel like these kids aren't smart.
Well, it's the creators that are complaining because they feel like they're losing viewers because of YouTube.
Well, then they need smarter children viewers.
Your viewers are too stupid to use their parents' account. The or lie. Or lie about your age.
Or lie about your age. YouTube
creators complain about YouTube.
Yeah, there's something new.
Yeah.
There's something new. Let's take a break. Tom Merritt, great to have you. DTNS, the dailytechnewsshow.com. From Engadget, the wonderful Robbie Baldwin. Isn't it Bobby? Because it would be alliterative if it were Bobby.
No, I don't like Bobby. I don't like Bobby and I don't like Robert. I especially don't like Robert. Roberto. It's not my name.
I actually
and like, well, you're in America. And I'm like, shut up.
I thought your name was Robert and you just were affected.
No, my mom's Mexican. Mexico and the whole
Roberto.
Can't you tell? Look at this. My olive
look,
skin.
You look like an Irishman.
Yeah.
How was St. Patrick's Day?
I went and saw my friend's YouTube cover band, and it was actually really good.
Wait a minute. Their band covers YouTube?
YouTube.
Oh, YouTube.
Okay. We cover YouTube. There's like anytime something popped up on YouTube, they're like, okay, I'm going to start playing
YouTube cover band.
Which is all YouTube videos anyway.
It's all YouTube. I think all of YouTube is a YouTube cover band. Also from Business Insider, little Stevie Kovac.
Little Stevie Kovac.
Yeah, you need to wear a headscarf. And then
Little Stevie. Yeah.
Little Stevie Kovac.
Yeah.
We're all in the band now, baby. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. If you're going to buy a new home or you're going to refi your old home, and by the way, interest rates are going up, so maybe you ought to be thinking about a refi. You're going to go to a mortgage lender you can trust, a mortgage lender that's loved by its customers. There is no better place to go than QuickenLoans.com. Quicken Loans. Just look at all those J.D. Power customer satisfaction awards year after year. Number one in customer satisfaction. Well, now they have a product for us geeks. It's called Rocket Mortgage. It is an entirely online mortgage approval process. So you get a great lender, and you don't have to put on pants. You could just do it from your couch on your phone. No going to the bank. No going through paperwork to find your check stubs and your bank pay statements and all that stuff. You know, you submit it all with a touch of a mouse. They've got, because it's the internet, friction-free. You can adjust the rate and length of your loan and get exactly what you want. And you will literally be approved in minutes. The last time Lisa and I bought our house took us, 6 weeks, 8 weeks? Took forever. We went on vacation. We were still 4 weeks. We were still sending paperwork from vacation. Not with Rocket Mortgage. You'll get approved in minutes for a mortgage that's just right for your financial situation from a mortgage lender you can love and trust. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Skip the bank. Skip the waiting. Go completely online. QuickenLoans.com/TWIT2. That's QuickenLoans.com/TWIT. And the number 2, equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Rocket Mortgage from QuickenLoans.com/TWIT. And the number 2. I love this. Apple clearly fixes prices of its phones, of its Macs. You can't buy a discounted Mac or a discounted iPhone, not by more than a few bucks. So I guess that's legal in the U.S., but Russia has now found Apple guilty of iPhone price fixing. They're going to face fines that could reach as high as 15% of their Russian revenue. The Russian Federal Anti-Monopoly Service says Apple ordered retailers to set prices and threatened them that if they sold the iPhone at an unsuitable price, they would be either have to change the price back or risk losing the right to sell iPhones. No comment from Apple on this. I just find it ironic that you could do it in the U.S. apparently, but you can't do it in Russia. Any comment?
It's Russia.
It's Russia.
I think, honestly, the weirdest part of this story to me was that they not only announced this, the FAS in Russia announced this, but then said that, oh, but Apple's fixing it. Don't worry. They just wanted to make a big deal out of it to you.
But don't worry, it's over.
The company has adopted the necessary measures to eliminate violations of the law and is pursuing a policy to prevent similar violations.
How do they get away with that in the U.S.? Isn't that, I mean, the euphemism we use is Apple controls its channels tightly.
Yeah.
But you can't get a discount on an iPhone or.
I don't know how it works. I don't know what the wiggle room is. But, there's all these things about gray market that play into their favor, which is, I can control who I sell to. And so, I guess they can't control you from reselling it without their authorization.
That I understand.
Approval, that's different. That's a different matter.
Yeah. iOS 11 will be 64-bit only. That could obsolete as many as 180,000 apps. Now, Apple probably has more than 10 million apps on the App Store. It's some huge number. 8% of all the titles, though, according to a company called Sensor Towel, are Sensor Towel. Tower, not towel. Sensor Towel is a different product entirely. Sensor Tower says it could be more than 187,000 apps would just stop working.
It doesn't seem like that many, actually.
Yeah, it's probably just a junky set of apps that haven't been updated.
They probably deserve to stop working.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's probably not that big of a deal.
There's like there's one app that I use that hasn't been updated in a million years, and when I updated to iOS 10, it just stopped, and it broke my heart. But
what was that?
Recordium. It's audio recording.
Oh, I remember Recordium. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great app. I wish they would get off their ass and update it.
Fix it, like Recordium. Something.
Come on, guys. Get it together.
I used to use that a lot. Now I use, I think Leo told me about this app, Just Press Record.
I love Just Press Record. Yeah,
yeah, you told me about this forever ago.
If you have it on the Apple Watch, you press the button and you can record on your watch. You can record on the
Apple. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Ah,
that's
I use Rev.
That's my go-to app.
What is it?
I use Rev now because Rev. You can have it transcribed directly from the app. And my time is too precious to be transcribing. Also, I'm a horrible typist, so it takes me a very long time to transcribe.
So you're actually spoken word, not you're using this for spoken word, not music recording.
Yeah. Music. Yeah. I mean, we have a place to record music.
It's called a studio.
Yeah.
Pretty sweet.
It's not so much. It's a practice space, but we have a PA system, and you know, when the bass player in the band, he records and produces albums on the side. Nice.
Maybe you want to get this. This is a nice Kickstarter. A case for your iPhone that turns it into an Android phone on the back.
No,
it's an Android phone in a case with a dual SIM card. That then does pass through lightning so that you can access photos and music and stuff either way, either direction, which I can't still decide if it's brilliant or idiotic.
It's so strange. Yeah. It's not expensive. I'm on the fence. $150.
So it's not a very good Android phone.
So it's like a really crappy Android phone.
I mean, if it was a good, because I carry an Android phone with me. But it's
like
if
you need you're a tech reporter.
I'm a tech.
No human does that.
Yeah. No human needs.
And look how it looks. You're on your phone, and the back of your phone is an Android device.
Right. It's two screens.
And then look how thick it is too. I don't know.
I could just tape two phones together and get the same and get a better experience.
Yeah,
Fly the Conkords where they have the camera phone where they just tape the camera to
you
a phone.
You won't have pass through of your photos and videos.
Oh, who cares?
I just
this
put
adds
them on
a 3.5 millimeter jack too.
Ooh, that's true.
Headphone jack.
Well, then you have Google Photos. So that's pass through. That's my pass through.
That's a good point.
Sure, sure. No, like I said, I can't decide if it's the stupidest thing I've ever seen or super genius.
I feel like
if you do need to carry two phones, this could be an elegant solution, right?
And you have two SIMs. So if you have to have
two numbers,
you end up and having three SIMs because it's dual SIM on the Android case.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, snap. This is like a 5 phone case.
Now how much would you pay? Google is fighting fighting law enforcement, doesn't want to hand over foreign emails. Pennsylvania court ruled the company had to hand over emails stored overseas in response to an FBI warrant. Apple, Amazon, and Microsoft stepping up to help their frenemies at Google with amicus briefs saying no. Now, I might be a little weird on this one because I know the tech industry and everybody says, oh, you shouldn't have to hand over data held on international servers. But honestly, in this day and age, data is everywhere. Why shouldn't you?
Because the FBI, has jurisdiction within the United States. So how do they have jurisduction within
international servers? Well, but it's an email.
I'm sorry, I haven't been keeping up with this.
No, I mean, this happens again and again. Remember, Microsoft was sued over data stored on an Irish server. Mm-hmm. And I think, they won and then they lost, I think.
Microsoft ended up winning that one.
They lost and then they won. Okay.
Yeah.
But
they won on appeal.
First of all, you got to recognize, you know, law enforcement needs to be able to subpoena people's emails. When you use an email server and you're an American citizen and you're sending email within the United States, just because Google puts that email on some other country's servers as part of its kind of system, should that let you off the hook?
Well, it does for taxes. If you put your American-made money in a different country, it's totally fine.
Yeah. Start storing my money.
Sorry.
You raise a good point, Leo, and I think another way to look at it is if, say, China says we would like emails of a dissident and we don't care that they're stored in California, Google, you have to give them to us. That's the other direction of this principle.
Mm-hmm. I guess the question is, and it's not clear from the articles I've read, because it's the FBI, they're investigating a crime that occurred in the United States, and these emails are not emails to international recipients, but emails that went on within the United States. But because of Google's own network system, they end up sometimes stored elsewhere.
So if I send you an email, my email is like, "Hey Leo, let's cause some crimes," but for some reason that email is being stored in Yeah. Taipei.
Shouldn't
for some
FBI
reason.
Be able to get it?
I guess. Why is it being stored in Taipei? That's my. Why is it? Why are those? Why is our you know U.S. emails being stored in other countries? Because, I mean, the whole reason for putting servers and it in other countries is to reduce latency. And I don't know. I mean, I guess. Yeah, I mean, if you have a valid warrant, and it's, you know, you're not trying to break encryption, and if Leo and I are emailing each other about stealing, I don't know, $1 million from, I don't know, let's say the Humane Society, we're just really evil people, then yeah, sure.
It's a matter of practicality versus precedent, and the judge is using the reason that you're using, Leo, which is, if you're opening the email here, where does it matter where in the world on the internet it was stored, right? Like, if I'm in the U.S., I open the email is now in the U.S., it's now under our jurisdiction, and the warrant should apply. What Google's saying is, well, hold on, though. That's not what's happening. We're not opening the email here. You're asking us to access it and bring it over here, and that's an illegal seizure.
Because
that data is over there in that data center for a reason, because it's closer to where people need it. And so you need to get that country to allow this data to be accessed. I think the judge makes a good practical reasoning, but there is a precedent here that you might not want to set, because for emails that aren't necessarily going to be in the U.S., you can suddenly say, well, anything in the world now is subject to FBI jurisdiction. And I don't think
it would be if the FBI is investigating a crime that occurred on U.S. shores. The Microsoft case, Microsoft stored the emails in Ireland only because the person whose account it was said he was in Ireland. And so they did that for convenience. But I don't think the person was in Ireland. It was an unverified statement of residence. I'm not sure why Google was storing these emails offshore.
I don't think you want to set the precedent that the U.S. Department of Justice can go anywhere in the world and get any data stored on any server, because they can make an argument that it somehow relates to the U.S. What you probably need is an international treaty similar to the shared data privacy rules that the U.S. and the EU have been working out, that says, okay, when it's stored in Ireland, let's say, you know, there should be an easy way for the FBI to apply overseas and say, here's why, here's the justification for why we need this. It's a person in the U.S. who committed a crime in the U.S. and communicated with other people in the U.S. And the Irish courts can rubber stamp that, sort of like Interpol or an extradition treaty for data.
Yeah, I guess it would come down to why the email is stored overseas. And I just don't think the FBI, if the FBI is investigating a crime that occurred in the United States between two parties in the United States with emails that were between those two parties, the fact that Google, for whatever reason, stored that data overseas shouldn't impinge on the FBI's ability to investigate that case.
I don't have enough information.
It depends on the instance. Okay. Like, what are the details of the case?
Yeah, and I'm trying to find that. In the case of the Irish case, the Microsoft case, the defendant was not an American citizen. So that might be the reason why Microsoft won that case. I don't know. Just wondering. I'm just asking the questions. I don't want to automatically assume that Google, Amazon, Microsoft, and Apple are right. Let's see. Oh. Also, I'm basically grasping at straws here because there's nothing else to talk about.
It was a very weird week.
Tell us about your new apartment.
I'm trying to avoid the story about the vibrator that they were collecting information about its users.
Oh, the hacked by the hacked
wasn't hacked.
No, it
oh,
was
not
a
hacked.
Leak.
Oh, okay.
So there's a internet connected vibrator. Who knew? Called WeVibe. You pair it with your app, and it can be controlled remotely. Don't know why you would want to do that.
They were collecting the intensity and some other data.
They were collecting the data on when and how the toy was used. And they didn't admit any wrongdoing, but they did settle $3.75 million worth of settlement because they had your login. They knew who you were, and they were collecting how you were using their device. So, in effect,
was it anonymized at all?
No, apparently not. They were in effect tracking their customers' sex lives.
That's creepy.
Without consent.
I'm more shocked that people bought this thing. There are enough people for them to track. Like, who bought this in the first place?
Customers' email addresses and usage data were transmitted to the company's Canadian servers. Oh, there you go. The lawsuit alleges when a Wii Vibe was remotely linked to a partner, the connection was described as secure, but some information was routed through Wii Connect and collected.
Temperature and intensity.
Temperature?
Well, yep.
300,000 people bought these things, but weirdly enough, only 100,000 connected them to the app. Why would you buy a Bluetooth-enabled vibrator if you didn't connect it to the app?
Price? I don't know.
Maybe maybe it was on sale. Maybe
it seemed
like
a good idea.
I'm always going to connect it to the app. It's doing its job without having to use the phone. Plus, I mean, do you want to be holding a phone while you're using it? You're usually pretty busy when you're using that. And, you know, if you have, well, hold on, let me get my phone. And then you're getting, like, Twitter replies.
What's interesting is the company that made this thing, while they didn't admit any wrongdoing, pretty just said, yeah, you're right. Here's some money.
Well, I mean, regardless of whether this was a vibrator or this was something in your home, you
could
know,
be anything.
A watch,
it could be an electric
or a phone or whatever,
carving knife, let's say,
or something that you wanted an additional amount of control over.
I have an oven. The fact that has a camera in it, and this is for the meat. But who knows where it's trained. And I mean, they made fun of Kellyanne Conway for saying that the Trump's microwave was tapped, but my oven could be tapped. It's just saying it's on the internet. I don't know if it has a microphone. It's got a full Android stack. It's got a camera.
Oh, if it has a microphone somewhere,
probably does.
But no, the idea that they, without people's consent, they were tracking this data. Wrongdoing or not, I mean, it was wrong, and they know they were wrong. That's why they paid all that money without admitting wrongdoing, which is sort of a legal way of saying, well, here's a bunch of money. We want to stay in business.
But what if, like, okay, my electric carving knife was tied to the internet, and the company that made it kept track of how often I used it, then sent that information to my insurer saying he's eating too much meat?
Exactly.
This company didn't send... this
we don't know what they did. They collected it. What else would they do with it?
Well, my point being, it doesn't matter if the carving company sends it anywhere or not. They should not collect it without your approval.
That's right. Good news. Kurt Eichenwald, who is an editor at Vanity Fair, writes for Vanity Fair, apparently wrote an article that somebody didn't like. That person allegedly tweeted him a strobe message trying to induce epileptic seizure. The FBI arrested that fella after a 3-month investigation this week. He faces federal charges for a cyber stalking. They kind of got the smoking gun because not only did they figure out that he sent the tweet, but they looked at his direct messages and he had messaged to other people, I'm going to kill this guy. It's going to really, you know, this is, you deserve a seizure for your post. They kind of got the smoking gun there. So interesting that is a crime.
Yeah.
Well, if I were to send something in the mail that would cause you harm, yeah, I would be charged with a crime. So this is the same. My mom has epilepsy, and the idea that someone would send her something that would give her a seizure, knowing that someone has epilepsy or any other seizure situation is, and then to use that because you don't agree with an article is ridiculous.
Yeah.
You should be in jail.
It's not the first time it happened. He said it happened twice before. In October, he had been sent a tweet or an epileptogenic cartoon, and he dropped his iPad before a seizure was triggered.
Yeah.
So that's
all about intention. That's bad intention.
That's bad intention.
Yeah.
And they got the smoking gun on that one.
Yeah.
We've got results from Pwned Own, and they're not good. We're going to talk about the S8 and Bixby, Samsung's new virtual assistant. I don't want Bixby. Mm-mm. I've got too many people in my life already. Do that in just a second. But first, let's take a look at some of the things we did this week
on Twit.
Previously on Twit.
Mary Jo and I decided that we could really bring the show up a notch if she had a gong behind her.
Yeah, like that.
Tech news today.
The founder of the private browser DuckDuckGo is here to tell us how to avoid being tracked while browsing.
DuckDuckGo is actually profitable. We've been profitable for several years. What people don't realize is even on Google, they make most of their money off the search engine itself, just based on the keyword you type in. And so it's really a myth that anyone needs to track you to make money in web search.
This Week in Google.
Is Google supposed to be a fact engine? Or is it supposed to be a
list? Yes. It would behoove Google and everybody to understand that we all need better critical thinking skills.
Google should be the card catalog for the internet, not some librarian saying, well, you know, that's not true. Well, that is true.
It's but people don't think of Google that way.
Twit. It's where your brain and tech meet.
Rise can just check this box and they can defer updates for up to 4 weeks.
I'm sorry. That slipped. That was a gong slip.
It sounded like a bomb.
That was a gong slip. Jason Howell, what's coming up in the week ahead?
Here's a look at just a few of the stories we'll be watching in the week ahead. First, the Nintendo Switch has been on short supply, but apparently Wednesday, March 22nd is a magical date. And that GameStop will get an influx of fresh new batches of consoles, meaning you too can get in on the fun. Oh, who are we kidding? They'll sell out before you get there. On Friday, March 24th, Samsung's next big tablet, the Galaxy Tab S3, will hit store shelves and will set you back a cool $600. That gets you a premium 9.7-inch Android tablet complete with an S Pen for when you feel inspired. Finally, if you're like me, life was too busy for you and you missed Star Wars Rogue One in the theater. And who are we kidding? Because that's no damn excuse, but still... Have no fear, because the digital HD version will hit your screen on the 24th as well. Yay. Who knows? Maybe it'll hit the screen of your fancy new Samsung Galaxy Tab S3 that you bought because GameStop was sold out of Nintendo Switches. That's a look at a few of the things we'll be tracking in the coming week. I'm out next week on vacation, but you can join Megan Maroney and Nathan Oliveira's Giles on Tech News Today every weekday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern here on Twit.
Thanks, Jason. Have a great vacation. I think you guys did such a good job so far that you all deserve snacks.
Free Nintendo Switch. Oh,
you don't have a Nintendo Switch yet?
No, I cannot find one. It's so annoying.
You know what I did?
I'm praying on the 22nd.
I paid a premium and got it on eBay from some guy.
Yeah, I refuse to do that.
It was only like $60 more. It was worth it.
Oh, that's not bad. I guess.
It's fun.
It's really good.
It was $4.33, but I got Zelda 2 as well. So. That's pretty good. Yeah, $60.
I don't even use it as a console anymore. I just use it walking around.
It's portable, yeah.
Yeah.
I get a special little purse to carry it in.
A man's Zelda purse.
It's a European carry-all.
Exactly.
It's a Nintendo Switch clutch.
It actually is a clutch. But then I got a strap so I could strap it on. Our show today brought to you by NatureBox. You know, this is an unopened NatureBox. This is something really unheard of. Usually we get our NatureBoxes at the studio, and they, as you know, Tom, they go fast. But this one is sealed up. Let's see what's in here. Ooh, crunchy barbecue twists. You know what? Peanut butter graham jam. So NatureBox snacks come to you once a month in a box. You get as many as you want. There are over 100 snacks to choose from. They're all nutritionist designed to be just the good stuff, nothing bad, high quality ingredients, no artificial colors, flavors, or sweeteners, and some great flavors. Big Island pineapple, cranberry almond bites. You come over here to get a NatureBox?
Oh, yeah.
Alex, yeah. Raspberry figgy bars. Peanut butter. This looks really good. Coated grams with dried fruit and peanuts. Wow, that sounds good. It's got like a gorp. Now you can order as much as you want, as often as you want. No minimum purchase required. You can cancel any time. You choose the snacks you want, and they have a snack guarantee. Look at, there they go. There go the snacks. He's stealing them snacks. This is the one you want, the Big Island pineapple. That is one of our favorites. We love that. Just, you know what's in Big Island pineapple? Dried pineapple. That's it. Nothing. It's the best dried pineapple you've ever had. Wait, let me open it up, and I'm just going to make you all jealous because it's so good. Right now, you can save even more. NatureBox is offering you 50% off your first order. Go to naturebox.com/twit. Oh, man, these are so good.
No sulfites, no preserves. Oh, I love these way too much. But you know what's nice? They all have the Ziploc resealable bags, so you can have just one and put it back for next time. Nature Box. I shouldn't eat pineapples while I'm doing the show. NatureBox.com/twit. 50% off your first order. We love you, Nature Box. Thank you. AMD's Ryzen is on the horizon. We talked a lot about it this week on This Week in Computer Hardware with Patrick Norton and Ryan Shrout of PC Perspective. I have been rooting for AMD. I want them to do well. They are trying to make a processor that can beat Intel. And while, according to Ars Technica and others, it's still not quite as fast as Intel, but it's close. And Ryzen has some interesting benefits. Of course, it's lower cost. They have 6-core and 8-core. In fact, their 8-core 16-thread is under $500. So it's a great price. And there's a whole movement to get it to work with Libre Boot and Core Boot, the open source boot firmware, so that Ryzen, and I think this could actually help AMD a lot if they did it, and I hope they do. We're looking at you, AMD. Ryzen might become the choice of open platforms, open hardware platforms. People a little bit troubled by Intel's master control program, MCP, some code that's in all Intel chips that phones home, and we don't know exactly what it does. And it would be nice to have an open processor. So, according to ours, Ryzen is actually a pretty good gaming processor. And at this price, you might see these in some lower-cost devices. The Switch has a really excellent NVIDIA K1 in there. And it really is pretty amazing. Don't know what to say. Do you have a Switch, Robbie?
No, I'm not really a gamer. I try to game, but then I get... I feel...
nauseous?
No, I feel guilty whenever I play games. Because it's either... I either have work to do for work, or I have band stuff to do, or I should be spending time with my wife and my cats.
No, you work at Engadget. You have every right to have a Switch.
I'm so bad at gaming. I'm just... I have a Nintendo DS that I play sometimes.
This is like the DS, only 10 times better.
I actually haven't seen one. No, wait, I did. I saw one on the plane.
They're pretty nice. Did you get one, Tom?
I did. I ordered mine from Best Buy, and somehow they had plenty in stock, so yeah. I didn't have any pre-order issues. Yeah. And Roberto, unlike you, man, like I'm really bad at games. And what's great about Zelda in particular is that
play.
That's fine.
Yeah, you just wander around.
See, my friend got it for his kid because he didn't want his young child to be playing, you know, that sort of open world Grand Theft Auto, which I find it was cool like the first three versions, but now I'm just like, all right, we're gonna go around, we're gonna kill people.
How many hookers can you beat up after?
Exactly.
All,
right? I was trying not to say kill hookers, but go for it.
That's what but, people do.
I do travel a lot, and I can't do any work on a plane because of how tall I am. So maybe it'd be nice to have something to sort of pass the time.
Is that your excuse? I can't do any work on a plane. I'm too tall.
No, I have to. I have to like type with my hands. Like right, I have to be a T-Rex in order to work on a plane with my hands. And then if the person puts their seat back, that's it. That's all there is to it.
It's just everybody.
Like my arm. I mean, look how long my arm is. It just keeps going and going.
Wow, look how long.
Yeah, you have to pay the tall tax, don't you?
Yeah, look at that. Look at that. Look at it's like the opening of Star Wars. Look at this thing. Just keep going. Another arm comes up behind it, shooting it.
Death Star arms.
Wow. Death Star arms. I like it.
That's the show title, Death Star arms.
I think so. We're going to sit on that one. Write that down. That's the one we're going to use.
Oh, but getting back to Ryzen, I think it's really cool that AMD is doing this. I think it's great for them, especially for people who want to build their own desktops and people looking for affordable, high-powered desktop and laptop
People will use Ryzens, HPs, and others will make inexpensive. They used Athlons, right?
I wonder, though, if I worry for AMD because I'm really rooting for them, and I see what Intel's doing with Mobileye. I see what NVIDIA's doing with Bosch and partnering to create an auto platform, and that's really where you need to go
for the future of processing. And Intel missed the boat with mobile. They're working very hard not to miss the boat with other platforms like auto and Internet of Things. And I don't see enough of what AMD is doing in those markets.
So AMD's fighting for a market that's dead or more or dying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or shrinking at least.
Yeah, they may win this market and at a point where it doesn't matter anymore.
Which maybe that's okay. Maybe they can become the supplier because we'll always need desktops and laptops. I don't think those will go away for quite a long time.
I like seeing competition, although at this point Intel's struggling with plenty of competition from ARM. It's not like there isn't competition in the market. So
right. Intel's going to have to leapfrog to the next thing.
Right.
Yeah. And also, don't call Qualcomm Snapdragon anymore. Did you hear about
that? Changed. It's just like a platform now, right?
Don't call it processor. It's Qualcomm Snapdragon platform. Mobile platform.
Platform.
All right.
It's a platform. Qualcomm mobile platform.
I'm concerned at how dark it keeps getting in Steve's screen. He went from like an Avenger.
Oh, my God. He was in a white room and now he's in a dark room.
Yeah,
now
he's slowly going into witness protection.
Yeah, he went from Avenger to Batman. Like, that's the lighting situation in his room.
What's happened? The spare bedroom doesn't have much lighting. I apologize.
Oh, and the sun went down.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the sun went down.
It's like you're actually in interrogation. They've got one bright light shining at you.
I kind of like it. It looks really creepy. Like, half my face
it does.
Lit. This is really cool.
It's a pretty dope film noir setup you got there.
Time-lapse it, like, just my screen and watch it. It's going to get darker and darker over the last hour.
Let's hurry
up.
When
did you know about the S8 specs? When? Go back.
Galaxy S8, we keep seeing leaks. It's on its way March 29th. There'll be an event in New York City. You guys going to go?
I'll be there, yeah.
One of the rumors that I really liked was that it might have a 1,000 frame per second camera.
Ooh.
Which would be a super slow-mo camera, right?
That's great. For cats jumping at things.
Oh, and that would be so awesome.
Dogs. I mean, literally, that's the only thing tech reporters own that's exciting are cats and dogs.
It's dogs.
We don't do anything. You're not going to see a video of us jumping off stuff and doing backflips.
Samsung's Galaxy S7 had actually an excellent camera, as do really all the Pixel's excellent, the Apple iPhone is excellent, but I think 1,000 frame per second super slow-mo would be pretty cool if they do it.
Even a year later, the S7 camera is still just
as amazing,
good.
Isn't it?
It's still, I think it still outperforms the iPhone 7 camera in a lot of ways, and just it'll be great to see how they improve on that this year.
Yeah, yeah. The S8 will have, according to rumors, because we don't know until the end of the month, but the 12-megapixel camera. They're going to add DRAM to the sensor. That's how it's going to do 1,000 frames a second. It'll record into its own memory in the sensor, which is pretty amazing. Also, an 8-megapixel front-facing camera with autofocus and a 3.7-megapixel RGB scanner. So there'll be three cameras in this. And that will be used for iris scanning and facial recognition.
Are they going to have an SD card, like a micro SD card on this? Because 1,000 frames a second is going to fill up your phone
quick.
You're like, I shot a 10-second thing, and now I can't send a tweet because my phone's crashing.
You know, they didn't have an SD card. Did they have an SD card in the S7? Yes, they did.
Yeah.
It was the S6 that did not. They had abandoned it.
Right.
And the Note 7 did as well.
I got mad at them for that.
Right.
But the S7 and the Note 7 before
that's
it exploded,
good.
The same little slot, you know, had it. So they'll probably do it again. There's no doubt about that.
And I don't know why. I really hate it that Samsung does this, but they always augment the Google apps in Android with their own version. They're going to have a voice assistant. They used to have S Voice. Now it's going to be called Bixby. And actually, Samsung apparently confirmed that on its Italian website.
Yeah, and that's based on Viv, which is created by the guys who made Siri. And so now you're going to get a smartphone that has both Google Assistant and this Bixby thing all in one competing with each other. Meanwhile, other Android phones are putting in. So it's just a mess. It's becoming fragmented.
It's
all
not user-friendly. I mean, the users just want one assistant that works. And I can just imagine, you know, Bixby saying, "You talking to me? You talking to me? No, I'm talking to Cortana. You talking to me?"
I had heard that Bixby wasn't based on Viv.
Oh,
But oh, is I thought
that,
it was.
Best Voice was based on Nuance. Samsung bought Viv. You would think that they would replace Nuance.
Well, yeah, and I heard Bixby was continuing to be based on S Voice, not Viv, which was Nuance's other separate thing.
Interesting.
But maybe it's something lost in translation in that overlap.
We'll find out March 29th, and it'll be April 20th or thereabouts that the S8 will be available for purchase.
I think it looks good, too. Those leaks that we've seen so far.
It's pretty.
It looks really nice. They've leaked everything.
Yeah, it does look nice.
And based on past leaks of Samsung devices,
there's
credible.
99.9% chance that's exactly what it looks like. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're very thin bezels.
And I like the rounded corner thing that's been happening now. The LG latest phone has it, and now it looks like Samsung's doing it too. Instead of the hard right corner edges, it's kind of this rounded corners. It looks kind of nice.
A lot of this is these companies getting their best foot forward, preparing for a 10th anniversary iPhone. Don't you think that they're a little worried about what Apple might do with the next generation?
Sounds like the 10th anniversary iPhone is just going to be a Galaxy phone,
it's really hard for these guys to come up with something new, right?
Right. It's they're finally getting the OLED screen, things like that wireless charging, things that have been around forever in Samsung phones, and they're finally putting that in the iPhone. They're kind of waiting for this 10th anniversary to stuff in all this cool stuff that we've wanted for years.
Ooh, they should stuff in a headphone jack.
what a novel idea.
What is this new technology?
They are. I just got a HTC Ultra, and it doesn't have a headphone jack. And it's like, why wouldn't you, in a big phone, too, why wouldn't you put a headphone jack? Although
but
it
that's
has
USB-C,
something,
right?
Yeah, it has something really cool. It comes with USB-C headphones, and if you use their headphones and you put it in your ear, they have this button you push, and it blasts about a second worth of white noise in your ear, and then it magically, I don't know how, generates a sound curve for your hearing. And it looks pretty accurate to me, because I've had audiologists test my hearing recently. It's pretty much my curve, falls off on the high end and the low end. There's a little notch at one frequency. And then it says, you want to use this equalization for all the music on these headphones? And it sounds much better. And it does it instantly. Cool. Samsung does this, but you go through a whole hearing test. This just goes, and then it somehow magically knows.
Did you just turn up the bass?
That's really probably. It's just loud. It's just loudness, right?
It's just like, what's up? Remember the loudness button? You just pushed it, and you're like,
everything
oh, my God.
Sounds better with loudness.
Better. Version.
Yeah.
Nice.
Pwn to Own. It's the big Vancouver hackers convention. They lots of money, big prize money. They put out computers with stock installs, and they challenge hackers to hack it. It used to be you'd win the computer. Now it's like hundreds of thousands of dollars. In fact, the members of Qihu 360, a security team, I'm thinking they're out of China with a name like Qihu, won $105,000, the highest price so far at Pwn to Own, for pulling off what many thought was impossible. They compromised Microsoft Windows with a hack against the Edge browser running in VMware, and they were able to get out of the virtual machine, escape to the hardware running it, and hack it and own it. And that's tough.
That's insane. Because whenever you talk to security researchers, you open everything in VM in a virtual machine. Because you don't want whatever you're working on to escape. It's like a little quarantine area. You're running Windows or Mac or Linux or whatever. You have this little quarantine area where you're testing this thing. You're seeing what it does. And the idea that now it can escape.
That's terrible. We've always said run in a virtual machine. You'll be safe. You're isolated.
This is great. Man. This is great news.
It's great that they found it. It's great that they're
figuring it out. Exactly. Right?
Oh, okay.
Because we so often do this with hacking stories where, like, security research found this vulnerability. Isn't it awful? No. When the security researchers find them, it's great because it means we patched them.
Although, because Pwn to Own has such big prizes, that these companies find these and hold on to them for months so they can exploit them at Pwn to Own and get that $105,000. They found a heap overflow bug in Edge, a JavaScript engine bug, which achieved code execution outside the Edge sandbox. Then they used a Windows 10 kernel bug to escape from Windows 10 and the virtual machine and fully compromise the guest machine. Oh, no, they're still in the virtual machine. Then they exploited a hardware simulation bug within VMware, the virtual machine, to escape from the guest operating system to the host one. And it was all started by going to a controlled website. So, you're surfing in Edge to this website with a malware on it, and you're owned all the way down.
No, that's because if they found this, that means people have already been exploiting this.
Well, that's what
that
worries means it's me. Already, how long have they known this?
At this point, yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's already, you know, more nefarious hackers, nation states who have been exploiting this bug probably for years or at least months. And now we know to patch them. That's every time something gets exploited, it's great that we find it. It's bad that the company, you know, missed it. But yeah, like Tom was saying, it's great that we know that that's something that's you can get out of VMware. That's insane.
That is the third.
You can't, thankfully.
Well, let's hope.
Well, this one, at least with this exploit,
There actually were 3 days of exploits over the 3 days. Day one, they paid $233,000. Day two, $340,000. Day three, that $103,000, $105,000 prize. So lots totally of worth exploits. It. Yeah. I have that fear that people are holding on to the exploits longer than they should because they want to make money at Pwn to Own.
Although they do exploit, they keep the details of their exploits confidential until
then they have
the
to
manufacturers
them.
Patch them. So at least there's that part.
So day one started with 360 security teams successfully using a JPEG 2000 heap overflow, a Windows kernel info leak, and an uninitialized Windows kernel buffer to gain remote code execution through Adobe Reader.
Is it the new Adobe Reader? Because that thing's a piece of crap. I'm so angry at Adobe for that.
They should really broadcast this. This sounds great. Next up, Samuel Gross and Niklas Baumstark earned some style points by leaving a special message on the touch bar of the targeted Mac. They employed a use-after-free exploit in Safari combined with three logic bugs and a null pointer dereference to exploit Safari and elevate their privileges to root in Mac OS. Wow.
That's awesome.
Then Tencent Security, Team Ether, targeted Microsoft Edge, succeeded using an arbitrary write in Chakra and escaped the sandbox using a logic bug within the sandbox, netting them a cool $80,000. $15,000 for the team that leveraged a Linux kernel heap out of bounds access bug to own Ubuntu. They actually popped Xcalc, apparently. So I don't know. I guess they opened Xcalc. I don't know. This would be great. Somebody's got to, you know, dramatize this as an event.
DEF CON? I don't know. It's kind of an
event. Yeah, it'd be kind of fun. And then,
what we do on live.
My God, what is he doing? He's doing an edge. Oh, my God, it's an edge hack. I haven't seen one of these.
You want esports casters for this? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I would watch that. I would watch it before I would watch esports. Just because the mindset of the average hacker and security researcher is amazing to me. The idea that, you know, it's like when you lock your front door and you think you're safe, but, you know, someone comes up and is like, well, I can just go through the window, or I can tunnel under here, or I can climb up over this. And that's the sort of idea of a security researcher, is finding other ways around the locked door.
Amazing.
Bob, I think he's going to combine that exploit with the kernel exploit. Is that what's happening?
I haven't seen this since 2008.
Outside the sandbox. He's outside the sandbox.
Oh, my God. Goal!
Anytime anyone gets outside the sandbox, there should be like explosions and lights and confetti, because that's the whole point of a sandbox for apps.
It would be fun.
I would totally.
For a certain... sad for myself. Type of person. Our show today brought to you by FreshBooks. That I want to talk about Edina, Minnesota, and why you don't want to do your searches there anymore. FreshBooks is the ridiculously easy cloud accounting software that saved my bacon when I used to go up to Canada to do the TV show. I had to invoice them, you know, expenses, and I had to do it in Canadian dollars, and I put it off and put it off. Amber told me about FreshBooks. It was just starting up in Toronto in 2004, and they saved my life. They now have 10 million Small business owners use FreshBooks to do their cloud accounting. It's invoices, the easiest way to do your invoices. In fact, because FreshBooks invoices have payments built in, your clients can pay you online by credit card with no setup on their part. They just pay straight from the invoice. You're going to get paid an average of 11 days faster. 11 days faster! And if clients view your invoice but say, oh, no, I didn't get it, you can say, no, you did, because you can see when your invoices have been sent, viewed, and paid. You'll also see overdue and outstanding invoices. You can brand them. You can set recurring invoices. You can even set recurring payments if your client says, hey, let's just forget this whole back and forth. Well, just, you invoice me automatically, I'll pay you automatically. And if people are slow, you get automatic late fees, auto payment reminders. FreshBooks time tracking, it's built into the web or their app. They have great apps for iOS and Android. It will let you bill for time by client, by specific projects, track your time down to the minute, manage team timesheets. You will know what you did, when you did it. And here's the best thing. This new dashboard they just released of FreshBooks shows you whether you're making money or not. I think a lot of small businesses really don't know till tax time. Did I make money? You'll know every moment because you're tracking expenses, you're tracking income, you're tracking outflow. You'll know exactly what you've been paid, how much your expenses have been. And it integrates with all the apps you already use, Stripe, Shopify, Gusto, Acuity Scheduling, and more and more and more. Ensure a smooth tax season. Save 192 hours a year. Just use FreshBooks. Try it free. 30 days await at FreshBooks.com/twit. Make sure you put This Week in Tech in the form where it says, how did you hear about us? That's FreshBooks.com/twit. Save the paperwork. You didn't get into business to do billing. You got in business to do the thing you like. Let FreshBooks.
Sleep in.
Yeah, sleep in. That's why, right? Let FreshBooks do the billing for you. It's awesome. FreshBooks.com/twit. I do not know what to think of this. This is wild. Edina, Minnesota. The Edina Police Department are trying to find somebody, Douglas Blank, we won't say his last name, who created a fake passport and attempted a fraudulent wire transfer of $28,500. It was stopped. It was stymied. But they're trying to track the guy. So they went to a judge and said, Your Honor, if you give us a warrant, we can go to Google and say, give us the name of everybody in Edina who searched for Douglas Blank between December 1st, 2016 and January 7th, more than a month, and we could catch this guy. Because if they searched for him, they must know him. The judge, Gary Larson, aptly named, not the cartoonist, of Hennepin County, said, yeah, approved a search warrant that looks into any or all user or subscriber information of anyone in the town of Edina who looked up the name. The investigator then filed the warrant with Google's custodian of records. The warrant says, I want not only the day and time of the search, but I want the name, the address, the telephone number, the date of birth, the social security number, the email address, payment information, account information, IP addresses, and MAC addresses of the person who completed the search.
This is insane.
This is insane.
This is going to be too challenged.
Google would not let this fly. It's way too broad. I mean, what, tens of thousands of people are affected by this. They're going to have their search history snooped into to see if they search for this guy. Then on top of that, all their other information like MAC addresses and everything you just listed. I mean, it's just way too, it's so broad. There's no way it's going to fly, and they'll appeal it and it'll be fine. But that's just insane. The judge even considered it.
It's not, and it's just, they didn't even bother to make it be child pornography or terrorism. It's right, some guy who attempted wire fraud.
Oh, and that too. And that's another thing. It's not like, oh God. Yeah. It's not like a serious, you know, terrorism crime or something like that. Yeah. Or, oh God.
How about the police do some police work?
How's that? Of acceptability.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe some police work, you know?
Okay. So what they're trying to do is say in this false passport, the guy used this image.
Right.
We know he was in Edina. If we can find out who searched for the results that come up with that image, then we'll be able to pinpoint the guy. Do I have that right?
Yes.
That makes perfectly reasonable sense, right? From that perspective.
Yes, but you have to look at everybody's search records.
And the idea is like you'd have to be signed into Google. First of all, you're searching yourself or your fake name. Then you have to be signed into Google.
Right? You're just searching.
Or you're signing your fake
Yeah, but you'd be signed in.
No, I don't even think you have to be signed in. They're just looking for IP addresses, right? And then if you're signed in, they could get more. I see the logic of asking for this, right? Which is like, probably only one person in Edina looked for this image.
This is the problem, though. This is what happens with police departments. God bless them. They're trying to solve crimes. They know, if I could just get into this phone or I could just get those search results, I would have the guy. I know I would. That's all I need. And I guess it really isn't their job to say, but that would be unconstitutional or that would be overly broad. They should ask for it. It's the judge who should say, guys, you can't do that. Sorry.
Yeah.
That's what the judge is there for. So who's
get it together, guys.
Get it together. Of course they want that. I understand why.
Yeah. And I feel like there ought to be a way for them to get what they want without having to compromise every single person's privacy.
The whole town.
Of course.
Yeah.
But you can't blame them for saying, you know, if I could only get into that chest, there's a pot of gold in there. And it's up to the courts to say, well, yeah, that's true, but you can't.
I know the legal system doesn't work this way, but it would be nice if you could say, Google, tell us how many searches for this happened from Edina on this day. And if it turned out to be one, then a judge could say, all right, that's a pretty good likelihood that that's your guy. Hand over the information for that one search. If it's 50 who searched, then you've got a different matter. But just this wide net of like, just give us all the data and we'll work through it.
We want everybody who searched. Yeah, everybody. Just give us everything.
Give me all the things. Just give it all to me.
I don't blame him for asking. I blame the judge for giving it to him.
I blame them for asking.
Really?
Yeah. It's stupid.
Steve's the Dark Knight. I mean, look where he's at.
Yeah. Yeah.
Steve had such bright, sunny commentary at the beginning of this episode. It's just getting darker and darker.
It's just darker. It's like, oh, I'm just so sick of
it. The darkness, do you think? Oh, no, it doesn't work that way.
it automatically adjusts.
Oh, maybe I should sit back a little bit more. There we go. Now it adjusted.
No. Sit forward. We want you to be in a dark place.
Come back forward.
Ooh. All right.
Yeah, there we go.
What is the third best-selling general-purpose computer of all time? That's a good trivia question.
Wang?
Wang. I think that would be Wang, Alex. What is Wang? No, that's not the answer.
I just wanted to say Wang.
Wang is just fun to say. The Raspberry Pi is now the third best-selling general-purpose computer of all time, displacing the previous third place holder, the Commodore 64.
I believe it because it's tough to get a Raspberry Pi.
That is just great. I love that. And of course, you know, I'm sure it's a PCs or one and two, but that is just a great success story. It's too bad about the Commodore 64, but
not a great success story anymore.
Yeah, really.
It had its time. It did.
I have one in my closet right over there.
A lot of you geeks started out on a Commodore 64. I think we can wrap this up. I don't see anything. It's just all downhill from here. It's just this is the we're at the bottom of the it's the seeds and the stems at this point. There's nothing. It's all shake. It's all shake
it's
now.
It's all shake.
Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing left.
When it devolves to weed talk, that's where we're like, well,
hey, it's legal.
Maybe we should wrap it
up. It's legal in California. That's okay.
I threw in the growing human flesh on robots story.
Is that from you? That's kind of an interesting idea.
Wait. Yeah. What's going on?
Annalie Newitz from Ars Technica wrote this up. It's a proposal from two researchers that you could grow replacement skin instead of in biovats, which is what they do now, grow it on robots so that it actually gets the exercise it needs to be a better kind of tissue.
Now,
when you grow it in the vats, it doesn't get stretching and the moving that it needs.
And that's cool because if I were missing like skin here or like skin right here.
Yeah, you'd want something like the robot.
It's just like it's not like a whole robot. It's just basically a lever.
It's just a wrist robot.
It does this all the time and moves around as like a little. And then when I get my skin, it's all ready to go.
Yeah, it's really that's cool. Because the researchers call it a humanoid bioreactor system.
When you go in a bioreactor, you don't get the right structure or cell counts that you need. And so they're proposing if we did this on moving robot arms that simulate it, it might help with that. Also, we could grow meat.
You're supposed to be able to grow meat. That's the other thing. Like, at what point does someone grow human meat and eat it?
Yeah. Well,
what is human meat if it grows on a robot?
Because you know the idea. Now I'm just going to stop talking.
Weirdly enough, they do want them to be humanoid, which is odd.
Well, yeah, because you want it to look like this.
Because you want it to have the same flexibility and cell counts that you would have on a normal human arm. So you need it to work like a human arm.
And you know, if you build an arm, you might as well get a leg and a knee and a Adam's apple in there too, so you know
a wing.
Get the.
I like that it has a shoe. It doesn't need the shoe.
You don't know. It'll
be cute. Put the shoe tight. Make sure you tie it. They didn't even get Velcro shoes. They got one with someone had to go down and tie the shoe and hope the robot didn't kick him in the face.
Yeah, it's nicely. Oh, look, there's a rib cage.
Yeah, growing the rib meat.
See,
with the blinking lights. That's like Data from Star Trek with all the blinking lights inside of them.
Oh no, come on. Why is he wearing flip flops? What's that all about?
He looks like without his shoe.
Now you know why they put the shoe on. Yeah. Oh.
That's a good exercise.
That's a David Lee Roth jump exercise.
If you're not listening, if you're only listening, you're not watching the video, you're missing a twerking knee robot right now. Getting down.
You have to do. You have to twerk the skin before you implant it on a human.
And there they
That's
are.
The scientific.
There's the
word.
Team.
Yeah.
Yeah. The twerking robot team.
Heroes, as far as I'm concerned.
They are. It's Nobel Prize written all over it.
Your finger skins.
The first step towards a biohybrid humanoid with cell-based actuators. Mm-hmm. It would be like a Terminator whose metal endoskeleton is covered in human muscles, tendons, and skin.
That's fine. I'm sure nothing bad will come of it.
What could possibly go wrong?
Have you guys not seen Westworld?
Come on.
Or Terminator, or really any show.
Terminator, Matrix, any of it. Yeah.
It'll be fine. Everything's going to be fine.
That's Roberto Baldwin. He's an upbeat guy. You can find his work, senior editor at Engadget. He's on the Twitter at STRNGWYS. And his Devo cover band, or his LCD sound system band, will be coming to a club near you.
If you live in San Francisco, we don't tour. We're lazy.
You don't tour?
No.
Yeah. If you smelled those rock and roll vans, you don't want to get in those. Thank you also to Mr. Stephen Kovac of Business Insider. He's a senior correspondent there at Steve Kovac on the Twitter. Always a pleasure. Your room's getting lighter now. It's almost
forward. I lean back and the camera adjusted. So when I lean forward, it gets
lighter. He's also the Dark Knight.
Oh, he controls it. Yeah. He controls it. Great to have you guys. Tom Merritt, always a thrill. Always a pleasure. Congratulations on the new novel.
Thank you. Because you were talking about pineapples earlier, I wanted to point out that there is, you can't really see it on here, I guess, but there is a chapter called The Pineapple Planet in Pilot X.
There were a pineapple planet.
There are no pineapples there.
Go to TomMerrittBooks.com to get your copy of Pilot X.
It's great art, too. I love that art.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, that art is amazing.
Dan Stiles, man. Dan Stiles nailed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A time-bending space adventure that had me hooked from the start, says Gary Whitta. Nice. The guy who wrote Rogue One.
Yeah.
Whoa. That's pretty good. Pilot X just wants to fly a time ship. But the guardians of Alenda, rulers of his people, throw him in the middle of a time war. How do you come up with names? Because one of the things that's bad science fiction always has bad names.
Yeah.
Is there a good method for coming up with people's names?
I use methods. One of them is to take baseball player names and mishmash them.
Ah, that's a good idea.
Oh, yeah.
Onomar Garcia Ringalingading.
Van Lingle Mungo.
Van Lingle Mungo.
Are those real baseball players? I don't know anything about sports.
Van Lingle Mungo is. That's a great song. Yeah. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Thanks to our great studio audience. Most of you made it. No cannibalism involved. That's good. You could be in the studio audience, and we'll put a nice comfy chair out for you if you email tickets at twit.tv. You can also stream it live. In fact, we're on YouTube live now, youtube.com/twit, on ustream.com/twit, on twitch.tv/twit, and, of course, on our own website. You could take your pick of those sources, twit.tv/live live. If you can't watch live, though, don't worry. On-demand audio and video is available at twit.tv/thisweekintech. And wherever you get your podcasts, do subscribe, though. We'd love to have you here each and every week. I'm Leo Laporte. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can. Bye-bye.
Yay.
Yay. I only brought up cannibalism once. So look,
yeah.